is a broke billionaire's thing. We don't have no money, but we have ideas, man.
What is a broke billionaires?
Broke Billy family was popping.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us once again for another episode of the Broke Billionaires podcast. It's a pleasure to come back again in 2023. Hopefully a bit more recurring episodes with a more consistent schedule this time around. But once again, it's a pleasure to be joined with you all today. My name is Christian, and I'm joined with my wonderful host.
Al Key Don. Hey, I just put my government out there. Don't want to steal my stuff.
I was just going to say, that was a dangerous. Usually I go by Kree-chan as well, so I just said my full name as well. So if you're not aware of my full name now, you know my full name. But for today's episode, we had planned a bit of a Netflix special where we're going to be discussing the Murdaugh murders, which
it's
is on
Netflix.
It's been
a while since we did this, too. The last time I think we did this was either Aaron? Gabriel Fernandez or Aaron Hernandez. It's been a while.
Which was, it was actually quite a while ago, if you don't count the one that, you know, something happened to an episode that we recorded a little while ago. But
which one was that?
We don't talk about that. The Nathan. Do you remember that one? The Nathan.
Oh, my God. That HBO doesn't count.
yeah, that one doesn't count. It's not a Netflix one. But we'll cover that one in the future. It's a really good show. But this one's about the Murdaugh family, however you want to call it. And it's a Netflix special right now. It's about 3 episodes. And, you know, it's a pretty good watch. But before going into, you know, any of the details or anything like that, we do want to preface this episode. This is a spoiler alert.
If you haven't seen it, spoiler alert.
Major spoiler alert. So if you haven't seen it before, please, you know, this is now your chance to click off if you don't want us to spoil anything. But please also know that this is also true story. So it is based off of current events, things that have happened. And there is there's a live trial currently going on at the time of recording. So we're covering the events, you know, as they happen or as they have happened up till now. And I'm really looking forward to chatting through this. So without further ado, Cal, did you enjoy watching this? And what were your initial thoughts when watching it?
I think it raises like a lot of questions in my head, more about like abuse of power, that people generally have the ability to take advantage of here in the United States, but more so, I think it's all over the world, but it's really more, it's like a money thing. And, you know, as I go through, like, walking you through kind of like what happened, I think it will become a little bit more evident as to what I mean by that when I say that, which is, and then we'll do like a little mock scenario after that.
Yeah.
And then we'll get into it.
Okay. Yeah. We can do a recap.
It was really good. I would give it a 10 out of 10 watch, in my opinion. I'm a true crime fanatic. I love anything true crime related. So any kind of story like that always tends to always keep my attention. So for me, it was really good. You know, if you don't like it, then you don't like it. But if true crime is up your alley, then I think it's a good watch. It's enjoyable.
Fair enough. Okay, well, without further ado, let's get into the recap, if you will.
Yeah. Take so like, yeah. So just to outline the main characters of this story. So there's the Murdaugh family, which consists of Alec Murdaugh, Maggie Murdaugh, their son Paul, and their son Buster. And then there's also 3 friends or 4 friends that are also linked to this story. So Paul, which is the Murdaugh, Alec and Maggie's son, Paul, he's dating this girl named Morgan. And there's another girl, her name is Mallory, who's dating this guy named Andrew. And then there's this other girl, her name is Miley, that's dating this guy Connor. So there's the 3 girls that have the names M, Morgan, Miley, and Mallory. And so what essentially happens in the beginning of how the show opens is that you kind of just find out about the Murdaugh family. It's the fact that they go really far back in this town of South Carolina. They're all like essentially like, I want to say like famous lawyers in their town, at least. They're like big shot lawyers. They own a law firm. and like they've been running law and order in that town.
They became prosecutors.
Like, yeah, all of them kind of are like prosecutors, and not just criminal cases but civil cases as well. So, but their family has been like lawyers for a very long time. Like, there was like three lines of this guy named Rudolph Murdaugh in their family. Yeah. And like the first one was a lawyer, then his son was a lawyer, and then his son, the third Murdaugh, was a lawyer as well, which is also Alec Murdaugh, you know, the father of that family's father. So essentially Paul and Buster's grandfather.
And Alec, isn't Alex a lawyer too?
Yeah, he's a lawyer too.
Okay.
And so he's like the current, you know, kind of like, I don't want to say like reigning lawyer, but this is more associated with their name. And obviously with a law firm, you have more lawyers than just their family. There's multiple other lawyers that work for the firm as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. But as you're going through the story, you just kind of find out that, you know, they are essentially kind of like run the main law firm in that city or town or whatever. And their son, Paul, and he's dating this girl named Morgan. And then there's another couple, like I was talking about, Connor and Riley. Her name is Miley, I want to say.
Yeah,
Miley. And then Andrew and Mallory.
Yeah.
So they're like Miley. It's so weird saying all these M names. It's actually confusing, guys. Miley, Morgan, and Mallory are like three best friends, or more. Mallory and Miley grew up together, and then they met Morgan later on in their friendship. But they're all like couple friends. And what essentially happens in the beginning is that you kind of find out a little bit about Paul Murdaugh, which is the son of Alec, the main lawyer in town. Is he has a big kind of like drinking problem. He's like notorious in the town for getting in trouble all the time. And since his, you know, his parents are like the main lawyers in the town, or his dad specifically. Now, I don't think his mom's a lawyer, but they're very rich. And so they're able to get their son out of a lot of trouble and essentially like sweep it under the rug. Anytime he gets in trouble, they're always able to sweep it under the rug. And what happens is, like, one night all three of them are hanging out, and Paul is, he's known notorious for getting really, really drunk, like blackout drunk every time he drinks. He just has no filter when it comes to alcohol. But, you know, prior to all these events, you know, when Morgan is dating him, she said she really liked him. You know, he's a really nice guy. But as soon as he starts drinking, they give him this alter ego persona that they call him Timmy or something. But what ends up happening is they all go to this oyster festival one night, and which is, I guess, oyster festivals. Are they a thing in Canada? Never heard of oyster festival until I watched
this show. I've never heard of that either. Whatever it is, they just ate some oysters.
Yeah, so aphrodisiac festival, whatever you want to call it. But anyway, what ends up happening is they all go to this festival. He gets really drunk, and his parents are rich, so they own a boat, and they go on this like this one river that they always go, I guess, boating on. And so come to find out, like, as they're, you know, they go on the boat, they go to the festival, then after, their son Paul is like telling the whole group, like, I want to go get more drinks. So they go and they boat to another area. They go grab some drinks, and everybody's kind of like hanging out. But Mallory and Andrew kind of just like hang back. They're just chilling. They're kind of like in their honeymoon stage of their relationship, because they are just like newly, this like new couple and stuff. And so after that, everybody gets on the boat, and this guy, Paul, is really, really drunk, and everybody's telling him, like, okay, let's just like get an Uber, like, you know, it's just not safe for you to be going in at this point. It's like pitch black night. It's like, I want to say like 2 or 3 a.m. something like that, in the documentary. And so, you know, everybody's just saying, like, you know, let's just like go home, like, just take an Uber or something, let's just not put ourselves in this situation. But this guy refuses to leave the boat, like, you know, typical ego type, I can drive, drunk person thoughts. And so everybody gets on the boat. Everybody's arguing at this point because he's so drunk, and he's just making it very unsafe when they're going in the boat. And not only is it unsafe, but this guy's just going in circles, just like driving the boat in circles. And so at some point, like, everybody's arguing. Then, you know, you kind of find out later in the documentary that Morgan and Paul, the guy that's driving, kind of how, like, he has an abusive relationship with his girlfriend. So they're arguing. Morgan's telling him, like, you know, you should not be driving right now. He slaps her. Then chaos essentially ensues. Everybody's mad, yelling at each other. And so what ends up happening is, you know, at this point, he's really pissed driving. And this guy, Connor's next to him with the boat, steering him because he's not even driving correctly. So he has to correct the boat every so often. And it's, mind you guys, it's pitch black at night. And if anybody's been on a lake, I've been on, like, big bodies of water at night. There's no lights. There's no, like, street lamps. There's nothing. You know, it's just, it just looks like, pure darkness. And so they drive the boat, and then they hit an, I forget what the specific name
like
for that.
It's like a bridge thing. It's basically
a specific name for what they hit. But, like, you know those things that I think they stick out of the ground that hold a bridge up? So they hit that. And so everybody goes flying, everybody's screaming, everybody comes to the surface except the girl Mallory. And so, you know, the 911 is called, and everybody's, you know, the police come, and what everybody realizes is, like, where's Mallory? Did they find Mallory? And so, you know, this kind of obviously destroys the friend group because this girl's, you know, everybody's frantically searching for her because they don't know what happened to her after they hit the boat. And so kind of what you later find out is that essentially Mallory passed away hitting the awning or whatever of the pier or the bridge or whatnot. And so she dies from blunt force trauma. And so this whole time, like, after she passes away, you know, everybody, like, they go to the hospital because not only did they capsize and hit the bridge, but everybody is, like, has cuts, bruises. Like, the kid Connor, his whole jaw, just like he in the documentary says, his lower jaw was in front of his upper jaw. So he went from having a normal smile to having, like, I think it's called, like, an underbite, where your jaw comes over your top row of teeth. And so after that is the Murdaugh's family comes to the hospital, and they're essentially telling everybody not to talk, because at that point it's been very clear that first Mallory's missing, they got into a boating accident, 911 was called, and they don't want their son Paul to get in trouble. So they're going to the hospital literally, like, at least 20-30 minutes after this had just happened, and telling essentially people, like, we got this, don't worry, like, we'll handle this. And in the hospital, while this kid is about to, you know, I guess get reconstructive surgery on his jaw, some Kanye level stuff, they're telling him, like, oh, you were the one driving the boat, right? Essentially kind of persuading him to say that he was the one driving the boat and not Paul, because they obviously want to sweep it under the rug because they have a name and reputation in the town. And so after that, you know, that kind of not, like, passes over, but everybody's really sketched out by what's already going on and what they're trying to do to in terms of hide it. And so essentially, like, a week or almost a week and a half pass, and they finally find Mallory's body. Everybody's mourning, right? Obviously, like, it's not like Paul is a sociopath. He does feel bad about what happened and stuff, but everybody doesn't want to talk to him. No one wants to have ties with him anymore. And while this is all going on, is essentially he's not indicted. No one brings him to jail. No one really does anything to kind of stop it, because the family is essentially kind of rigging the cops and not wanting him to go to trial to get in trouble. So as any normal person, if anybody, if, like, you or I, Christian, for example, did something like that, we'd immediately be locked up or put into jail. Not only the fact that we did something, but, hey, you're black in America, so it's easy to pin it on you. But, yeah, American politics. But, so that kind of happens, right? And some time passes by, and essentially it's 2 years after the court case, and he's not really put into jail or anything like that at this point. But, you know, a lot of dissension is happening in that family. And what happens next is, like, 2 years kind of after everybody's recovering from it, you know, mentally, obviously people are going through therapy, the kid Paul is still not in jail or anything like that. What you find out is that the son Paul and his mother Maggie end up dead on their property. And mind you, they have multiple properties because they're very rich. And so they find out, like, the dad comes back home, allegedly, and he says that he went to go visit his parents at the nursing home because they're very sick. But this is actually true, that his parents are sick. Like, his dad is really sick, and his mom has dementia. So, allegedly, he left the property, came back, and when he came back, he found his wife and his son essentially dead on their property. So he calls 911, and you know what I hate about, like, this is just like a side note. What did you think about that 911 call when, you know, the dad called 911? Did you think it sounded real, fake? What were your thoughts?
I thought at the start it sounded real because he was super scattered. He sounded worried. He was like, you know, my wife and my son, and he sounded emotional. And then, you know, part way through the call, his tone kind of changes and like when he's giving like facts and stuff like that, and he's almost talking nonchalantly. So I just thought it wasn't as consistent.
Yeah. So initial and response. For me, and even for me, like, I don't know, like when you get into that level of, okay, let's just say that he's not the person, or, you know, we don't know anything about that at this point in the story yet. But, like, everyone can kind of be a good actor, I feel like, on the phone or anything, something like that. So, like, I don't know how hard it is to fake that kind of emotion, because obviously I've never been in that kind of situation. But he calls 911. He sounds frantic. And he's the 911 operator is asking him, like, what are they breathing? You know, what's wrong with them? Like, can you tell us, like, we're sending someone already, but can you tell me, are they breathing? What's up with their body? And then you come to find out that they were shot multiple times. Paul's essentially, graphic warning, guys, trigger warning, is that essentially he's unrecognizable from the shots that he suffered to his head. And so Maggie was shot in the back a couple times, I think, and maybe once in the chest or something like that, or Paul was shot in the chest. But essentially, you know, they've already deceased at this point. And so you kind of, like, as the story is going on, you kind of find out that Paul has gotten into a lot of trouble with the law, and they've swept it under the rug multiple times. And you know how I was saying earlier that their family is like, has a whole list, or have been lawyers dating far back in that town for a very long time. Anytime that Paul got in trouble, he would call his grandfather, and him and his grandfather have a very good relationship. And then Paul also has a very good relationship with his babysitter, but he doesn't have a good relationship with his parents. And this is because he was kind of like the black sheep of the family. And so he didn't really want to be a lawyer, but their other son, Buster, was a person that, you know, kind of wanted to pursue law. He went to law school. He wanted to kind of take the family's mantle or whatnot. And so
he got kicked out for plagiarism later on.
Yeah, you kind of find that out later on. At this point, you know, like, for the family, it's just not good optics, because the son is always in trouble. And so after that, like, they start looking into Alex Murdaugh's, like, life, because they're, like, trying to figure out, like, where was this guy when the, you know, the murders took place? You know, was he actually visiting his parents? What was going on during that time? And so you kind of find out later that not only was Paul causing them a lot of trouble, like, as part of their life, you kind of find out that later in that story that they were also having a lot of financial troubles, and that Maggie had hired a private investigator, a financial forensic investigator, private investigator, to look through their financials because bills were not getting paid and stuff like that. So she was, like, curious as to what was happening with the family's money. And so after that, like, they're really looking into their family, and what they kind of find out is that anytime the Murdaugh's name comes up in something or trial or something happens in the town, it's always swept under the rug. Like, for example, like as Christian mentioned earlier, is that their son had gotten kicked out of law school for plagiarism. And a lot of people didn't really, I guess, hear about that and know what was going on with their family, but that had happened. Also, that their son, Buster, before he went to college and did all of that, like, you know, before getting himself kicked out for being an idiot, is that he had this friend, his name was Steven, that used to tutor him for science and a lot of stuff because Steven was really smart and he wanted to be a physician when he grew up. But Steven was also very, was, I was about to say, there's no such thing as very gay, guys. He was just gay. But their family wanted to be very secretive, that's what I meant to say, about that. And so it wouldn't look good on the family. So what you end up finding out later is that when Buster was in high school, one time Steven was, I guess, driving on the road and he ran out of gas, which is, you know, the kid Buster's tutor for some of his courses. Like he not hired him, but he was like a friend that helped him out with his courses. And secretly, they was like rumors around the town that, you know, him and Buster had a secret like relationship and that they were essentially like involved with each other. And being gay in that community and town was very frowned upon. So what you later find out is that Steven was found essentially dead in the middle of a highway, and that the last person, like as the story continues, like private investigators were hired by that family to find out, like, you know, what happened to the kid. Like the police never really followed up about it, that, you know, the town really rallied together. But then as soon as the Murdaugh's son came into question or became one of the suspects, like everybody came, or the, you know, town, like I want to say the law and order in the town came to kind of essentially go from like looking what happened to Steven to kind of defending the Murdaughs. And so that comes to light, and that Buster was associated with something like that. So after that, like they look even deeper into Alex's life. And then what they find out, another thing too, is that remember when I was mentioning that the kid Paul that had essentially been murdered on their family property was really close with their babysitter, and their babysitter had mysteriously also died as well. She had come up the steps of their family home like every day to work like normal, and she had fallen and fractured a couple ribs, and she had blunt trauma to her head from that fall as well, and she had passed away. And so what was really weird about all of that and Maggie's death, or not Maggie, but was her name? What was the girl, the lady's name? Was her name Millie? I think their babysitter, like Millie, or someone fact check me on that. But Millie, when she was passed away, what she had found out was that Alec, when they're, you know, as they're finding out more about his life, what did Millie know that would possibly lead to her essentially being, you know, murdered possibly? Because at that time it was just assumed that, according to the 911 calls, which you get to hear about, she had just fallen on the steps, and when Maggie, the mother that was, you find out later, was murdered, was on the phone with the 911 calls, she was acting really weird. Like there, she was just telling them to come and help her because Millie had fallen down the stairs.
Gloria,
that's her name. Yeah. Gloria. And when Gloria had fallen down the steps, she was acting really weird on the 911 call. The lady was trying to ask her questions to like figure out what happened at the scene. And she was like, "You're asking me so many questions. Can you just get someone down here?" But the lady's just trying to do her job and get more, as much conclusive evidence as she can about what had happened and led to the fall for her.
Yeah.
But after that, you find out that what Gloria knew was that Alex Murdaugh, the father of that family, who's also the person that allegedly found his wife and his son murdered, he was really addicted to opioids. And she was cleaning the house one day and had found like a bag of opioids duct tape under his bed because he was trying to get clean, or she had told Paul, this is much earlier, because she passed away far before any of this happened, the boating incident or any of this. So she had found out that he had the opioids, and she had told Paul that, you know, I found this, you know, under your dad's bed, like, you know, we might need to help him out or detox. And obviously, if you're a lawyer and someone finds that much opioids on you, you, it's going to be a big situation on the town, and who knows, you could possibly be
family name, et cetera. Yeah,
family name is going to be tarnished. And if anybody's watched that documentary Dope Sick, there was a doctor that was also addicted to opioids that got, I think, is it delicensed, or I don't know what's the proper term for that, but he got kicked off the board,
something like that. Yeah,
like he got kicked off the board of being a doctor, and the same thing could happen to you as a lawyer. And so that could have been the reason that she was possibly murdered. So after she was murdered, or after she had died, the family, Alex, this is everyone's still alive at this point, like I was saying, had said that he was going to take out a, he was going to sue himself, and essentially not really suing himself, but sue the insurance company so that he can get money to, you know, give something to her sons, because she had worked for the family for a very long time. She had essentially raised Paul up until this point, because she did, because Paul didn't really have a good relationship with his parents. Like I mentioned, he was really close with Gloria, so he told her everything. That's why she told him about the opioid use of his father. And so after that, you know, he sues the company, and you know, you don't really, the family, her family, Gloria, had like two sons and brothers and stuff, but they never really heard about the case until later. And then as they're doing more digging after all of this happened, and that, you know, the son had died, the wife had died, you know, after the boating incident, obviously, is that he had taken out a estate, I think it's like estate insurance or some kind of insurance on his property, so that if anything happened, you know, he would be able to, you know, not be sued and still be able to pay the person that it happened to. So what ended up, you kind of find out, is that prior to her death, is that after they had essentially, like, he sued himself, he had taken all that money for himself. And then they do more digging, and then they find out that this guy has been embezzling a lot of money from the law firm as well. So the whole family is essentially been corrupted. But essentially, this is just goes back to what I was saying in the beginning of the podcast, is that it just comes down to a level of an abuse of power that families tend to have. And it's usually very inextricably linked to the, you know, the legal system. And if you're someone that's in the legal system, you wield a lot of power that you can sweep stuff under the rug. And now, you know, you come to find out is that Alex Murdaugh has been put in trial, and he's, you know, I was surprised by this, and they say it was surprising in the documentary that he is being indicted and not being let go on bond because of the murder for his son and his wife. Because as they're doing more forensic evidence, they find out that Alex Murdaugh, although they did not catch him on video at the property and the time of the murder, they could hear his voice at the time when close to when the murders had happened, and they saw ballistic velocity liquid evidence that linked him to essentially the murder. So what I perceive that to be is that either he shot them and caught, like, some, the bullet hitting their body had fragmented some liquid from their body to be splattered onto his clothes. And so they're taking a look into that. And then also the audio evidence that linked him to being where he, you know, on the property while it happened and not visiting his parents makes him the prime suspect for the murder. So that's the murder mystery scandals. I did a lot of talking, but it just kind of goes back to what I was saying. It's just, it's just an interesting look at how abuse of power can be wielded in this country, but just not in this country. It's just notorious in this country because it's just a lot more money and more people are able to do it and it fly under the radar than other countries that probably don't have as much money. So yeah, that is the Murdaugh Mysteries kind of synopsis summary for you. It's really deep. It's a really good documentary. But, you know, let's say that, Let's do like a little mock event, like I was saying earlier, Christian. Let's say that you are in vicinity of this family. how, let's say that you were Connor, for example, how would you even, you know, let's say they tried to pin the boat and what happened to Mallory on you, what would you say to even help defend yourself? Let's say, you know, it's a day after the boat crash, Mallory had happened, something had happened to Mallory, and they're trying to blame it on you. Where do you think you would go next? Let's say the murderers are after you. What would you do?
Honestly,
just to kind of like paint a picture of how hard this situation is to be in for people like this.
Totally.
Or, you know, everyday people, for example.
I think Connor would have been screwed if it wasn't for the evidence that they had as soon as the first responders showed up on the scene. There was like some video evidence and some audio evidence of just everybody that just, you know, they're cut up, they're bleeding, they're hurt, and they're all like, Paul was driving, like, and then this happened, and da-da-da. And it was overwhelming that all these people all had the same story. They all said it, and they had it on recording. But if that was not available, I totally believe the Murdaugh's could have pinned this on the other guy, Connor, and there wouldn't have been any questions about it at all. But even similarly, Cal, like, there's a lot of theories as to, like, because, you know, allegedly people are claiming Alex or Alec Murdaugh killed his son, Paul. Like, a lot of people think that the reason why he did that was also to make the boating stuff go away, because they were unsuccessful in making it go away. This way that it would just go away and no one would have to deal with it, or it wouldn't hurt the name. It wouldn't tarnish the name. Oh, some murderer killed my son and my wife. My son was never persecuted. No one in my family has ever been guilty.
Yeah. But to go to the level of murdering your own family for that, it just kind of, it kind of makes me think of a couple things.
It's psychopathy, bro. It's crazy.
Yeah, obviously you're a sociopath at that point. But also, what I learned, and I don't want to say that all drug-related dependency problems are like this, but like when people are abusing opioids to that level, I've watched in this show called Dope Sick, which I think is a very accurate representation of what opioids can do to destroy your life, is that you'll go to any lengths to defend yourself and your use. So whether that means, and obviously, you know, the tarnishing of their name is a big deal also, but one of the things that makes me think of it, like, also is just that when you're not in your right state of mind at that point, like, and you're pursuing drugs to that level, you will do anything to hide your use. Like, and for example, you know, if this is indicative of anything, is like how Gloria had died earlier, and nobody had questioned it until much, much, much later, you know, until when they actually investigated his life, and he essentially, or she, Maggie, could have, you know, pushed her down the stairs or killed her, so that people wouldn't find out about their use. And now this, his opioid use and his drug dependency is probably coming into question. And also the things with his son and both sons, one also obviously plagiarizing and getting kicked out of law school, the other one essentially having murdered someone. And then your wife, you know, wanting to investigate you for financial crimes, all those culminations of things would push someone, not that it's excusable, obviously I'm not defending this, but would push someone to do something insane like that. So yep. It wouldn't be far-fetched to think like someone would do something to this level to want to watch their own back. But it's kind of weird to me. Obviously, I mean, they obviously love their son Buster more, as the show kind of depicted. So that's probably why he didn't do anything to Buster. But to do something to your wife who you allegedly love and your son who you don't really seem to love at all, it's kind of crazy to me.
Hundo P, bruh. Hundo P. It's just very mind-blowing, I would say, altogether. I would say, would you agree that, you know, from the start to the finish, that first of all, that there's these families out there that have this much power where, you know, they started off as some lawyers, and then they moved on to being prosecutors, where when your families are the prosecutors, you can just, you know, tell your family to make it go away and it'll go away. But then on top of that, just seeing all of these things, like, for example, the Stephen Smith case, just like a kid found in the middle of the road where all the evidence is pointing towards, you know, foul play, not him getting hit by a car. But nobody does any digging into it anymore. It's just case closed. It must have just been a hit and run. Case closed. Next case. Something else. You know, the boating incident. And then the two deaths of the family members. It's just, there's a lot that's going on here. And it just was very, very mind-blowing to me.
That it takes that
much. This exists.
Yeah. That it takes that many things to happen for someone to want to.
Yeah, because what wasn't brought to the light, you know? Like, this is like a small area, small town area. About,
yeah.
Things might not have even been recorded, like written down, like filed away. Who knows what else happened in those places, man? And I just really hope that justice is served. And yeah, we can even go into the court case because we mentioned earlier that the court case is still ongoing at the time of the recording of this podcast. And it's a messy one. It's a very, very messy court case. So just like, once again, just as Cal said, Maggie, who is 52, Paulo, 22, they were both shot dead at the family's property in South Carolina. And this was on the 7th of June, 2021. Alec Murdaugh. Very, very recent. And Alec claimed he returned home from visiting his elderly mother to find the victim's bodies at the dog kennels. And no arrests were made for over a year. And that's when he was charged for the murders based off of some of the evidence that Cal mentioned earlier. And prosecutors believe that Mr. Murdaugh, Alec, killed his wife and son to distract from the growing number of scandals and crimes swirling around him. So these two things are not just the only things that involved him. This man was stealing money from his law firm, like millions and millions of dollars, and siphoning it out and engaging in all sort of illicit activities with, you know, drug use and
a bunch of other things. Suing himself and saying that he's going to give the money to the kids of Gloria, but ended up pocketing all that money for himself. The kids never even got a dime of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the housekeeper that died on his property. Yeah, there's an insurance policy tied to her, like a life insurance policy, and he spent the money for her life insurance policy and didn't give her sons. Her sons didn't even know that money existed.
That it even existed.
Just so tragic there.
But scandal after scandal after scandal, you're just kind of like, I don't know. This is why I don't want to say that it doesn't happen in big cities, but like it would take so much more organization to happen in a big city. Like you probably have to know so much more people to get away with something like that. But like if you live in a small town, like rural, you know, nowhere that no one really knows about, you know, everyone knows your family and your family name in that town and you're rich, it's so much easier to get away with stuff like this. And like, this is just one example of like this happening, but you know, call it conspiracy theorist or not, like this probably happens, it's rampant all over the country. This is just like the one that Netflix happened to talk about today, but like how many thousands of other like situations is this happening to, like all over the country? But yeah. It is, I don't think it just stops at lawyers and stuff, but it definitely goes into you know, more. I always don't believe politicians, so I think politicians and lawyers are probably number one up there for being able to cover up scandals. But
I can't even chat on this either, but like I heard, you know, some stuff. I don't know too much about this or U.S. politics and whatnot. I heard about like Joe Biden's son and his like laptop or something like that.
Oh, the Hunter Biden
laptop. Yeah, Hunter Biden's laptop. And it's one too. It's if your daddy's a president, you can make anything go away.
Yeah, and I don't really, this one I have to do a lot more digging and fact checking about, but I mean, that guy was guilty of a bunch of stuff, but he was like, on his laptop, he was like, there was like recordings of him doing cocaine and him having strippers and hookers or whatnot, like him recording himself. So he's an idiot for, first of all, doing that first, but also recording it and having evidence. But yeah, like something like that can just, you know, like, and this makes me, this is another thing too, like let's say Obama had any situation like that, like if you were, this is not even to really make it a race thing, but like I guess it is a race thing, you know, what I'm talking about. But, like, let's say that someone like Obama had a former president. Any of his family was involved in anything like this. There's so much more scrutiny and eyes that would be on you if you were to do something like that. Like, Obama had to essentially be blemishless for something like this for him to be swept under the rug. So not only is, I guess, abuse in America be able to be better hidden if you're white, but also, like, if you have a lot of power, it's so much easier as well. So, like, but for, like, Obama, if any of his kids were ever involved in anything like this, I don't think Americans or a majority of America would have ever let something like that ever slide. Like, now we know Hunter Biden, it's a big situation, obviously, but people don't talk about it like that as much as they would. I feel like if you were a person of color, possibly, and this happened in your town. So it's just interesting how, like, not only does power influence this, but race also influences your ability to sweep stuff under the rug like this. So, I mean, we didn't mention this in the beginning, but yeah, the Murdoch family is white. So it was probably much easier in a rural town where the majority of the population is white for you to be also be able to sweep this under the rug as well.
Yeah, I agree completely. And yeah, but do you think he's guilty?
100%. I have no doubt in my mind.
You don't think it could have been someone else?
No, I think it's impossible. Because the recording evidence of him being on the property talking, although not being seen on the video, is enough to make me believe he was not only there, but also the fact that the ballistic evidence and then everything else that's going on in his life, I think it would drive someone easily to do something like that, especially if you have sociopathic tendencies.
Or you're
straight out sociopath for that matter. I mean, it's as simple as that. For me, the question is, if I was on the jury, 100%. If I was on the jury and they asked me, someone wanted to be like, no, he didn't do it, I'd be like, nope, I will not change my vote for anything. Nope, he did it 100%. There's nothing that can convince me that he didn't. But the interesting thing was to, like, as you see him in the documentary, the time he was like huge, like he was a really fat guy, and then he went to jail. And, like, the next time you see him in jail, I think it's not only the stress of the whole situation, but, like, probably jail food isn't that great. But he lost a lot of weight when you see him in the court the next time, which means, like, yeah, it really caught up to you and you're not escaping this, you know? So that probably eats at you for the whole rest of your life. Also knowing that, you know, if you are charged guilty for all these things, you have life without parole. So if he's charged eventually, whenever the court case, you know, comes to a resolution, is like he's never leaving jail.
Yeah,
so that has to probably hit you at some point.
Yeah, that's true. But, like, so what they found was that both victims were killed with a different gun. Oh, yeah, why do you think that was?
I mean, wouldn't it be easier to cover it up if it was with two different guns?
Yeah, that's my question. Like, do you think that he was trying to cover it up by having two guns to say, like, two shooters?
Yeah, like, you could possibly say, like, oh, it was two different people. It's not like shooting people with two different guns is that hard. You have one gun right next to you. You shoot one, and then as the other person is running, you shoot the other person. It's not like it would be that hard to make it seem like it's not one person. It maybe from outside, you know, I don't know, maybe, you know, after knowing all of this, maybe someone would assume initially, not knowing any of the evidence that we know now, maybe there were two people that did it and they were using two guns and that would make it more believable. But, like, knowing everything that happened now, it's not hard for me to believe that maybe he just picked one up, shot one, like his son, which is crazy to say that he shot his son, then he shot his wife. So, I mean, these are, I guess, allegations still, you know, it's not been 100% proven, but the evidence is pretty damning, if you ask me.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I even just reading, like, various Reddit threads about people's theories and people's analysis, like, some people are so brilliant, man, like, this one Reddit user here, shout out to DJ Eaton. I don't know what he's eating, but he just says like so many things. He's just like, Alex's mom was far gone, that she didn't even know he was there. And then after the murders, he was running around, and there's even some things about like cell phone data being deleted from the time of the murder, shows that there was knowledge of the events during that time. And it kind of brings the question, like, if your wife and son died, wouldn't you want to save their last texts and calls and voicemails and stuff like that? Not have that stuff deleted.
Then again, I don't know how much we could take, you know, a Redditor's evidence, you know, into.
And he did admit to lying too about like being at the dog kennels, because he, you know, how he said he wasn't there, but then the evidence said he was there for the video on Paul's phone, and then he said he called 911 about 20 seconds once arriving back in there, and then checked the 20 pulses.
Seconds too is like. Okay, this is another thing that we didn't mention also. They have multiple properties, and where they were shot in the property is not really close to the house. It was like in a field. So if you found them 20 seconds after arriving on the property, that means you didn't even go home. You immediately went out to the field, didn't check your house. Like, wouldn't you search your house for at least... Christian, let's say someone's missing in your house.
Yeah.
Let's say you're looking for someone in your house. Like, hey, mom, like you walk into the door, no one's answering. Hey, like my sister, or say, let's say someone like is missing from my house. Like, hey, mom, and I know they're supposed to be there. I'll go look upstairs, call their names, possibly look downstairs, call their names and be like, yo, is anyone here? Possibly call them first and then see where they are if they don't answer. And then by the time that's all said and done, that'll probably be like, let's be generous. Let's say that's 5 minutes. I do that all in 5 minutes. Call both people that are missing, check all of my house, and then possibly look around my property to see if they're there, because maybe they did leave their phone in the house. But within 20 seconds of arriving to the property, you immediately call the cops. Like, the first place that you check is outside. Isn't that seem sketch?
Very, very, very sketch.
So that would be my first initial thought that's cap already.
And yeah, and you know, there's also some analysis done on like what the beneficial or like the pros and cons to these people being dead and what they do for Alex Murdoch. And this person has like a list of like over 40 things, like because Maggie, so his wife, Alex's wife, and him were having problems, so she was likely going to leave the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And one big reason was that he would have control of the properties to sell, you know, get money. And also, you know, if he sees her as his object, he owns her. She can never leave me. That way he can stop her from ever leaving him, and also stop the name from being tarnished.
Which also explains the mind of a sociopath.
Exactly. Probably remove the $30 million lawsuit that his son brought upon the family. Yeah, so there's a lot of different reasons of why or what he possibly could have gotten away from.
We can put a link up to that Reddit post.
Totally, we totally could. Yeah. I'll toss it in there.
You guys can take a look at it yourself. Even.
Yeah, but otherwise, guys, highly, highly recommend it. And with regards to the case, like, and I chatted with Cal very briefly before this, and I know you haven't looked too much into it, but it's pretty bone chilling. Like, to listen to some of these interviews and having the people called up to the stand and ask the questions, including Alec and Buster and just all these different individuals. And you just see them and they ask him so many questions. They ask Alec, like, did you lie about this? 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 And he's like, yep, 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 yep. They're just basically telling the jury that this guy is a pathological liar, because he admitted to over 50 lies in a row that he just said, did you lie to this person? Yes. Did you lie to this person? Yes. Did you lie to this person? Yes.
Dang.
Like... And it's just, you can't even question it anymore. He's just a pathological liar. And then he cried at one point too. And, you know, I didn't know if those were crocodile tears or
prosthetic tears.
Yeah. Or prosthetic tears. He was talking
cosmetic tears.
I couldn't do this to my son or my wife, or it's delusion. Like, it could be delusion. Who knows? Maybe it was psychosis. Who knows? Like, maybe he's not okay. Maybe he does, like, he's fully convinced that he didn't do it. But I don't know.
But I mean, to plead a case of insanity would be incredibly difficult. Like, people think that you can just go to the stand or, you know, claim insanity. Like, nah, you can't just do that. So, like, if he's trying to do that, it'd be damn near impossible. So that wouldn't work
out for him. And he's a smart guy, man. Like, he's a lawyer. People just forget about that. He knows what he can and can't do or what he can and cannot say. And
he did it for a living. So,
yes. And he was good at it. He got all the best education. He had the best lawyers before him, like his father and his grandpa. Yeah, so highly recommend to tune into the case and watch it day by day.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, there's a lot of... I gave you guys like a synopsis, like a quick 20-minute synopsis, obviously, of 3 hours worth of watching. But like, there's some stuff that I obviously left out that would show you the amount of power that they wield in that community and how they're able to sweep other things under the rug. There's like things that I mentioned, but there's also a bunch of things that they talk about in the documentary that I didn't mention that I think, you know, will give you better context that will show you like how they're able to sweep stuff under the rug too. That happened with between Paul and Morgan, which is it was his girlfriend at the time that they got into that was also able to be swept under the rug that, you know, she was able to witness and essentially give evidence for as well. So like don't take just what I said. Is like, I mean, I think I did a pretty good job of like kind of like giving you a walkthrough, like the cliff notes of everything that happened, but there's a lot of context that you guys can also gain from just watching it as well.
No, you did a good job, really good job, like recapping it, I think. And yeah, just definitely give it a read and tune into the trial, and I really hope the jury make the right decision, because right now the main defense that Alex Murdoch's team has is that they're basically saying that there's no physical evidence tying him to it. And
I mean, I don't really have much faith in the legal system as it is already, but I would be, I know, I wouldn't say I would even be shocked, but It would surprise me a little bit if they did let him go. But, you know, these days, you know, who knows what can happen in court.
Yeah, and even the son, too. Like, the son was, like, his son Buster, not involved in any of these things other than maybe the Stephen Smith one. We speculate, but we don't know for sure. But regardless, he's been testifying on the stand, and he was telling them that like his dad was super destroyed and heartbroken after the killings, and he sounded normal, and that he knew something was wrong when his dad called him, and basically vouching for his dad. But some people again speculate that he had something to do with it, or he was in on it with his dad, or he was, you know, the favorite child, so maybe he was spared by the dad. I don't know. There's a lot of speculation going around, but regardless, in my opinion, jury needs to make the right decision. I feel like it's overwhelming evidence that this man is guilty and that he has psychopathic tendencies. He has admitted to lying to the authorities and been lying forever. He was an addict for forever. I mean, he's been drug-free for 18 months, I believe, but regardless,
you're in jail.
I think this man needs to go. Yeah, exactly. Jail made him clean.
Yeah, so like, I mean... Congrats.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting this guy's not in an orange jumpsuit or anything? He's just like wearing a suit.
I mean, as they would for anyone with money, you know.
Yeah, I suppose.
You gotta make the person look as marketable as possible.
That is true. Just make them look like a human. Make them look like they're not a criminal. It's really smart. Actually, random side note too. Did you see that case recently? I don't even know the name of the criminal, but the guy, he was driving like a vehicle and he drove it through a parade, I believe. And
I feel like I heard about that possibly, as you guys know, from my number one trusted world source of
world star. Sorry.
Yes, and I didn't know much else about that. I like maybe heard about it or saw a headline, but I
didn't. Okay, really, well, my point is with that one was that this guy decided to represent himself in court as his own lawyer. And it was the most, like, I'm not going to lie, there was funny moments. Like, it was pretty funny at times because he was just so out of line and he was trying his hardest to, like, act like he was a lawyer and be professional and stuff like that. But there was just so many moments where he would just be calling a person to the stand who was, like, the father or mother of a victim. And then he'd call them to the stand and he'd be like, describe the individual that you saw driving the vehicle. And he'd be like, it was you.
What did he say after that?
He was just like, it was you. I don't know. The clip would just cut. it was just funny. He'd be like, thank you.
that's what we need representing Alex Murdo, honestly.
Yeah, I don't know. It was just craziness. Just seeing people who are, you know, the criminal themselves, acting like they're the lawyer and you know, standing and calling people to the stand and stuff like that. But yeah, that guy ended up getting a really long sentence. But yeah, very, very interesting side note. Maybe we'll chat more about that in the future. But otherwise, I think we did this one justice, Cal.
Yeah, I think we did a good recap. But on brighter note, we just watched Tommy Fury and Jake Paul. And Jake Paul lost, boys! Let's go!
Let's go.
Okay, I'm not really a Paul. Hey, if you're like a Paul fan, then I guess power to you. I don't know. What do you guys dap each other up, give each other belly bumps or whatever? But
that wasn't a close fight at all. That was not close.
It wasn't a close fight, but yo, me and Christian were talking about this and watching it together. Yo, I have never seen paid actor like announcers like that ever. They try to say because he knocked down Tommy in like the last round that he deserved to win. When this man, Tommy was lighting this man up for at least seven mm-hmm. straight rounds, lighting him up. And then mm-hmm. they wanted to almost try to get, I was like, yo, we really have paid actors on the freaking announcers.
Yeah, 100%. This guy was twerking. Like, Tommy was making this guy twerk. He was hitting him, knocking him left and right, left and right, left and right. True. And then he just, Tommy tripped. Like, it was a knockdown, sure.
It looked counted. More like a slip
but,
to me.
Yeah, he, like, kind of, like, slipped because his footing was a little bit weird.
He did get, like, a good shot on him, but it looked like he lost his footing and fell backward because he stood immediately back up.
Yeah, it didn't even take the time. Like, usually with a knockdown, you're supposed to breathe like 10 seconds kind of thing, but no, yeah. This guy stood back up immediately. Okay, let's go, let's ready to go. So
if you guys are looking to watch something entertaining and see Paul finally get their L that they so rightfully deserved, then watch this, because they've been involved in a bunch of scams, crypto scams obviously. So that's, you know,
oh side my gosh up. The Zoo but, token like,
yes, you tell me.
Oh my gosh.
But like, just to see like Jake Paul talk all this trash like online about,
yeah, I'm gonna knock him out, I'm gonna knock him out, like right before,
and then like fighting people that one aren't boxers, two are at least 50 years old, three are like basketball players, and then now you finally fight a professional, which I'll give him this, like if I got in the ring with Jake Paul, he would knock me out in 3 seconds flat, 100%. Like, no bro, cap. I wouldn't too. Give myself even 30 seconds in the ring with this guy.
Taking us
but,
out, bro.
But to say that when you finally fight someone in the area that you claim to be a quote-unquote professional at, and then you finally get your dues, it was satisfying to watch, to say the least. So now praying on the downfall, but you know, when you see someone get the dues, it is entertaining. So yeah, definitely guys watch that. It was pretty entertaining aside from all the depressing stuff we talked about a little bit earlier, but interesting. Depressing, but interesting.
Definitely check it out, or at least the highlights. And we definitely watched it legally, Cal.
We watched
it legally.
Yeah, we watched it very legally.
Yeah, legally with the L, not the I, with the L. But anyways, it's been a good one, guys. It's been a good podcast here. Let us know your thoughts if you ended up checking it out, or you know, you just listened to our Spark Notes. Check out the Reddit, which is like r/MurdoughFamilyMurders.
There's a lot of really good. The name of the documentary too, by the way.
Yeah. lots of really good, you know, discussions regarding the crimes and theories and facts and whatnot. So check that out. But otherwise, yeah, it's been real. You know, we don't got money, but we got ideas. And this is another episode for you, and looking forward to the next one.
Deuces.